Projects and Operations Subcommittee meeting, November 10th, 2020, 4 o'clock p.m. Roll call. Roll call.
Fowler?
Here.
Jeff?
Here.
Saminsky?
Here.
Anderson?
Here. Before starting tonight's meeting, notification of Open Meetings Act is posted on the back end of the room. Is posted on the back of the wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used. Directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and action. Thank you. Item number four, adoption of agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Saminsky?
Yes.
Deezer? Hi. Item number five, I have proof of publication of tonight's meeting, which will become part of the public record. Item number six, review and recommendation of policy 16.7, Dominic Walters Foundation Playground, John Winkler and Tiffany and Ryan Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I would say once in a career, maybe twice, you're lucky to have a project that not only professionally but personally impacts you as a person, and I can say this is one of those. The Walters family approached us in the fall of 2018 regarding the possibility of donating funds to construct a new playground here at the Chaco Hills Recreation Area. And they had a tragic event occur. They lost their son, 4 years old, to an accident or a heart condition when they were in a family vacation in Minnesota. And Tiffany and Ryan Walters are here today, and their daughter, Nora, who they call Boone, is with them as well. But so they approach many different organizations, and they're here to answer any questions and tell you more of the details. But so the current playground we have is at least 25 years old. It meets no current safety or ADA accessibility standards whatsoever. So we've been working with them, and if you look in your packet as well as the picture back here, that is the playground's design. According to our policy, a individual, corporation, family has an option to, if they donate to a particular either facility or like the playground, they have the naming rights if the board agrees, and so that's why we're here today. The cost of the playground equipment installation is $279,071. The distributor of the playground equipment gave a grant for $76,464, and a donation to the NRD from the Dom Walters Foundation is $105,000. So the NRD to cost of the purchase and the installation is $97,607. Now, we did budget $125,000 for this in our budget, but the Walters family did extremely well, especially during the pandemic in fundraising. And so instead of $80,000, they're offering $105,000 to the district for the purchase and the installation of the equipment. In fact, we've already received the check, but we have to wait until you approve it before we move forward. So obviously, we strongly recommend to do this. We've worked with the Corps of Engineers. The Corps has approved it to be able to do this at this site as well. And they could tell you more, but the family would come here every weekend when their son was alive, and I think they do now, to utilize that playground equipment and the facility. So this would be a great amenity for years to come. For kids to play on this, and then also to honor their son. So I'll turn it over to them, and they can answer any questions that you might have and tell you a little bit about kind of how they got to where we are today.
Okay. Hard to follow up what John said. I mean, I don't know what else we can add. So it's been 2 years since we lost our son. And we knew right away that we wanted to do something. And people gave us money right after he died, and we kind of figured, you know, he kind of hemmed and hawed, what do we do? We got to do something with this money. And we, you know, reached out to John, and here we are. I mean, we started off like maybe we could just add something to that playground or just do something little or, And he said, no, let's go big. And so here we are, you know, raising money to build an entire new playground for the entire community to enjoy. And like John said, we came here every weekend with John. I mean, even when he was not even born yet and I was pregnant, I was out here running and walking, and we took him out here every weekend, and we do that now with her. It's really a place for our family loves and enjoys, and we're just so thrilled that we have this opportunity to do something like this for the community and for Dom. And we come, even when we're here with our family now, we can see him, we can feel him. You know, it's almost like he's running right out in front of us. It's just a great kind of sanctuary place for us. We never thought we'd be building a playground for him. We never thought we'd make the connections that we've made. And we never thought people would find our story so moving that they would graciously donate. We never thought we'd get to $105,000 without doing any real fundraising events because of the pandemic.
Yeah,
but
we had one formal fundraising event, and it consisted of 20 people. We had five planned for the spring and the summer, and obviously that ended. But people continued to give, and so this $105,000 isn't from us, it's from the community. We had over 1,000 people donate. We wrung our friends out for the most part, you know, and the response has been overwhelming. The support from the NRD has been overwhelming. The connections that we made have been absolutely amazing. So, yeah, I don't think there's nothing we're going to be able to do to thank everyone involved enough. Yes. Ryan Walters, Tiffany Walters, and Nora Walters. She goes by Boone. That's what Dom nicknamed her when she was, a week old. So it stuck. So, and she was only 5 months old when Dom passed, so she really has no reminder or memory of him actually existing. So,
are there any questions about the park or anything that we're talking about?
I want to thank you very much.
Yeah, pretty special. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nothing positive in this world right now. And
right.
Bringing
yeah,
such joy
exactly.
to families
right.
and other children is pretty special. So
right.
Yeah.
I'm very happy about this.
Thanks for sharing that. When you come over, you feel his presence. That's very powerful.
Yeah.
Very
it's,
nice.
It's a, we love it here. We love it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard to find a wooded area in Nebraska, let alone Omaha. And so we found this in 2012. We've lived in Papillion since 2010. Dom was born in 2014, but, you know, every Sunday we were here. Back in here, walking on the trails.
Really touching memorial, and I'm like, proud to make.
Roll call.
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Andrew. Hi.
Are we good?
You're good.
All right, thank you so much.
All right.
Can you wave goodbye? Say thank you.
Hey, boom.
I see on the playground.
Item number 7, review and recommendation of bids received for Pigeon/Jones Creek grade control structure PJ-12A. Terry Schumacher and Mike Blackie, also.
Good afternoon. On October 28, 2020, the district staff opened bids for the Pigeon Jones 12A structure in Dakota County. This is a project with a little over 229,000 cubic yards of earth in the dam. It'll be a significant to high hazard structure, so it'll have a concrete riser and that sort of thing, and a reinforced concrete pipe through the middle of it. It's part of the Pigeon Jones Special Watershed Project, and this will be the 11th of the 22 planned structures. We received 4 bids, and there's a bid summary attached. Also, a map is included of where the site would be. And the Bids range from $1.6 million to approximately $4.6 million, and the engineer's estimate was just a shade under or shade over $1.6 million. Debtless and Constructions bid of $1,626,514.23. It's the apparent low bid. The staff and Olson, Mike Plackey, who's with me this afternoon, reviewed the bids and have determined that Debtless Construction is the lowest and best bidder. And that would be the staff's recommendation to the board to award Debtless Construction the bid for PJ-12A. If you have any questions, Mike or I would be happy to answer those.
We can have a motion on this item.
So moved.
Second.
One from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
Is there a 13 coming up then? This is 12.
Well, there is a 13, and there's a 17 and a 20. Those would be the three next on the radar, but let's get this one done.
Well, I understand that, but I guess I'm just looking long-term, assuming that that gets done. Activity whatsoever on anything besides, except for this one at this point.
There's discussions with landowners. Obviously, one of the things in this watershed, the easements have been voluntary. So the negotiations sometimes just take a little longer.
Right. And then, so how many acres altogether is involved in this particular project? And it's all donated, right?
Yeah. Well, the watershed's 3,000, and then what the lake's going to impact is a little over 50 acres of lake and the dam. And that's just pretty much for the permanent pool. And, of course, the flood pool will be more than that, but that'll be pretty intermittent.
But there's no land cost whatsoever, correct?
That's correct.
Roll call.
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Hi. Thank you very much. Item number 8, review and recommendation of Papio Watershed PL 566 site S-21 completion federal interest. Martin Cleveland.
Good afternoon. Could first let's go to the map, Bill, the first map. Show you this location where it's located at. Okay, yeah, I'm not Amanda, by the way. She's taller, has blonde hair, all those kind of things. But so it's right after the memo, Bill. Okay, maybe you don't have any of that?
No.
Anyway, I'll start in. This current structure was built in 1974, so it's 46 years old. And the structures are designed to last about 50 years. That's the design life of the structure. It's actually a road structure located on 108th Street near Stram Road. So it's a Papillion area. It's right adjacent to the new dam WP7, which is called Big Elk Creek, or Big Elk dam site. And so what has transpired here is over time, development has surrounded this lake site. There's actually a new road that was built upstream of it called Lincoln Road. So that took out a lot of the grade that was in this structure to start with. There's also then down below it is the other dam, which is WP7. So what has transpired here is basically this structure is no longer needed. Essentially, the road is no longer going to be active. It's actually going to be abandoned, the road itself. The structure obviously is about end of its life anyway. It's 46 years old out of 50. It's about where it's going to be need to be replaced anyway. So there's an opportunity here to do what we call complete the federal interest in the structure, which basically means the NRCS, the USDA says that the structure's its life has been expended and you're no longer having responsibilities under the federal guidelines, which are called Public Law 566, to maintain the structure. So it lets the district off the hook for maintaining the structure. Okay, this is the map that shows the location. If you could just go to the very bottom, Bill. There's a red box around it. It's, again, near, it's Lincoln Road and 108th Street, which is in the Papillion area. The red box defines where the structure site's at. Go to the next map, if you could. This shows more of a blown up of the structure site. The dam, again, is the existing dam is noted with the arrow. It says existing S21 grade stabilization structure. There was probably one time a bridge, and they put in a culvert, and this was maintained by the district, even though it was a county road for decades. And so upstream of that, again, Lincoln Road, they're putting in a new road to one end as well as a box culvert, which takes out a lot of the grade at this structure. So, again, there's going to be about a four-foot drop between the Lincoln Road and then the WP7 structure pool, which may be accomplished through a couple of small drops. So essentially the need for the dam is gone. But that's the overview, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you have on this. Questions may have about it. Director Jeff?
Did the Papio NRD originally build this?
It was built actually before the Papio NRD. The Papio NRD came into existence in 1975, so it was built about a year before. It was probably built by the Sarpy Water Conservation District, which existed at the time. And they turned that over to the Papio when Papio came into existence. So we've been maintaining it for, you know, decades. But again, it's, you know, 50 years for a life of a culvert is usually about it for a metal pipe. So they're doing us a favor probably in a way that we can get rid of this liability. It's a liability really now at this point because it's an old structure. So Amanda builds the dams and I take them away. It's kind of what the agreement we have to work it out. She builds a lot more than I take away, but this is one that we're proposing to take away. And it's best for the district we do this, actually. So.
How much for staff recommendation?
Second. Anyone else? Any other directors have questions? Roll call.
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Thank you.
Hi. Thank you. Item number 9, review and recommendation of lead pedestrian bridge substructure repair bids. Eric Williams.
Yep. Good afternoon, everyone. This is the lead pedestrian bridge over the Platte River. We've been doing a number of different repair projects since the flood in March of 2019. This is the third project. We'd previously done the superstructure, meaning the railing and the fence along the top. The substructure is the icebreaker noses on the upstream side of the piers to help protect the bridge itself from strikes like ice coming down the river, similar to what we experienced in March of 2019. We have designed this project. Schemmer did the design work. We went out for bid, and we received two bids. Both were from contractors who had been specifically recommended by Schemmer as having experience in bridge-type work, although they're not contractors we work with regularly. Schemmer reviewed the two bids that we received. The low bid was from JJK Construction at $132,074.18. Bill, if we can skip through the attachments that we've got here, if we can get kind of a little bit of an idea here. First page was the recommendation letter to approve the bid from Schemmer. Second page is the bid tab with the two bids there. Here are the breakouts from each of the two bids. One more. And then after that is the plan set. There were just five sheets in the plan set. And this, again, is the location. And if you go one more page, now you can see the location of the three piers that need to have straps added to hold the existing icebreaker in place, and one pier that needs to have the icebreaker reinstalled because it was knocked clean off of the structure. So a new icebreaker piece of concrete will be poured. Next page. This is kind of the plan view to show you that those straps hold the existing piece in place. And this is somewhat of a kind of an unfamiliar type of work for a lot of contractors. There aren't very many structures like this that have icebreakers that need to be replaced, reinstalled that often. You can see on the bottom plan that they are somewhat at an angle. All of the structures were dislodged in the same direction between about 2 and 5 degrees. So the ice was moving from the southeast back up, southwest back up to the northeast and pushing the icebreakers across. The intention of this this repair work is to avoid the risk that a future event would knock these structures off of the front of the bridge and leave the piers holding the bridge in place directly exposed to ice and other debris coming down the river. So this repair will bring it back to roughly the same condition it was in previously. The new icebreaker will be not at about a 45-degree angle. It will be a flatter nose. That's more in line with modern icebreaker design standards. And again, Schirmer reviewed the bids that we did receive, and they recommend that we accept the bid from JJK Construction for $132,074.18. That's a little higher than the estimates, but again, the estimate was a little challenging on this project because this is not a particularly common type of work to be done. We have talked with Lower Platte South. Any portion of the cost of the repair for both the superstructure, the railing, and the substructure that is not covered by FEMA, that would be shared between us and Lower Platte South per the interlocal agreement. Game and Parks does the operations and maintenance, but they are not involved in the cost share. Based on the numbers we have here, the potential cost to each of the two NRDs is about $43,000 after about the $130,000 from FEMA. Lower Platte South agreed to this cost. They had budgeted for it. And so we recommend that we accept the bid from JJK and reinstall the icebreaker noses to help protect the structures, that they'll be in place in time for ice out at the end of February in 2021.
Thank you.
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Yes.
Aye. You're up again. 10, review and recommendation of the West Lucas County Trail construction contract bid and resolution. Eric Williams.
This project is also familiar. We've talked about it a number of times. The most recent time was when we provided the construction cost estimate earlier this spring before the plans went to the NDOT PS&E process, which is the last step before the bidding. NDOT did put the project out for bid. Bids were received and opened. And the low bid that was received was $6,076,628.51. From the attachments that are provided here, there's some summary information about the bids that were received. Bill, if you have the attachments. First page, again, is the map showing the location of the project, which should be familiar. Next page is the cover sheet from the project, again, kind of showing Valley. On the left side of the bridge that will be constructed is the Douglas County West Schools, including the new school that was recently constructed. On the right side, or the east side of the bridge, over the old highway that you can see sloping northwest to southeast, the east side is the YMCA. So that is a major feature in the overall project. Next page, please. What NDOT has provided us is this resolution. There is a significant amount of additional documentation that NDOT has. But what they're asking for now is a resolution from the Board of Directors approving NDOT to finalize the contract and send the construction contract to us to be executed. The contract is between the NRD and the recommended construction contractor here, which is Graham Construction. And so the contract is directly between us and Graham, and NDOT facilitates it and then provides, in this case, a fixed amount of total funding towards that project. And then the NRD is responsible for the additional cost on top of the fixed amount of federal funding that has been available throughout the course of this project. There's the bid tab showing the four different bids. There were two that were extremely close, and then two more from other reputable construction companies in the area that were in the same range, a little bit higher. All of them were higher than the construction cost estimate. When this was presented earlier in the spring, we had one estimate number through the PS&E process. The engineer's estimate was updated from about from the earlier number, and then by the time we got to the final construction number, the total cost is higher than what we had presented in the spring. The memo that we provided does list the change in cost from what was listed earlier in the year and the overall impact to the district. Previously, I had indicated that at the time in the spring, the estimated total cost to the district was about $1.9 million. After the PS&E process and the updates there, and then the final bids that we now have, the total expected cost for the entire project at $7.89 million. The federal funding, again, is fixed. This does not increase. It was an earmark, and so it's fixed at just over $5 million. And so the district total cost with this construction contract would be about $2.859 million. This is an increase of about $900,000 from the estimate that we had in the spring. This is because the federal aid portion is fixed and does not increase, the percentage of the increase to our cost is larger than the percentage of the increase to the total construction contract. So while it was about 14% higher than the estimate, our cost is all of that increase. And so that's why the numbers seem a little bit different there. We have talked with NDOT. We had previously made a contribution towards this project in 2020. We have budgeted funds to make a contribution in 2021, and we are expected to make a contribution in 2022. Those were expected to be about $950,000 each. In talking with NDOT, the expected construction timeline would be in 2021, completion probably toward the end of 2021. There would likely be some construction wrap-up work that would happen in the spring of 2022. And so we've requested that they investigate whether the reimbursement could be after July 1st of 2022, which would allow us to stretch our contribution into our next fiscal year, which would be 2023. And we'll talk with NDOT about that. That would mean that rather than increase in the next 2 years, we would have an additional contribution at the end in that third upcoming fiscal year. Again, a huge portion of the benefit of this project comes to the two cornerstone community organizations that are located on each side of the bridge. That would be the Douglas County West Schools and the YMCA. And we do have representatives here from the school, the YMCA, and the community who would like to provide some input here as well. I'm not sure if you'd like to make a motion first or if you'd like to hear from them first.
We can hear from them first.
Great. I'll let them introduce themselves.
Hello. Can you hear me okay? My name is Macy DeWhistler. I am the executive director at the Twin Rivers YMCA and Valley. I've been with the YMCA for 20 years and at the Valley YMCA for 4 years. I also live in Waterloo, so I'm very familiar with the community. I've been hearing about this for 7 years since I moved to Waterloo. should I take it off? Is that okay? There. We are very, very excited for this. This is a great connection for us to the actual community. The YMCA is actually located on the other side of the railroad tracks. For our summer day camp program, we like to walk to the outdoor pool, and we have 60 kiddos in that program. It's very difficult for us to get there because we have to walk along the highway. The bridge over the railroad tracks should be very beneficial for us. It's a great connection to the school. It's great for our community to be able to walk to the YMCA for their programming. We're very excited about this and hope that you will consider this for us.
I'm Melissa Polonsik. I'm the superintendent at DC West Community Schools. And I would reiterate a lot of things that Macy said. We have a tremendous partnership in our community with the Y, not only for our children, but our staff and our families. We're very connected in many ways with programs that we have. I also live in Valley, so I live in the community. This would be a tremendous resource for us. And I also have been in the community for 7 years as a superintendent, have heard about the trail that entire time. So standing here today, having you actually taking a look at the reality of it, is just pretty exciting. So I'd love to be able to go back to our Board of Education and share that this is going to happen. So thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Ford Fisher, a longtime Valley resident, and I really am honored to be here on behalf of the NRD, the community, the Y, the schools. I'm one of the founders of the Y in Valley that sits on 40 acres, and we've always been separated. This trail system has been in the works now with all of us for nearly 20 years. The Y is 17 years old. We've heard a lot about it, but what it will do is it will take that railroad. We've gotten all the easements. We've had many, many meetings. It'll bring our community and our Y and our schools all together within Valley. Valley's growing. We're excited about this project. Overrides are always disappointing. However, I think the benefit to the city of Valley as we grow, to the YMCA, Macy and her crew, we have 1,100 Y members now. I know the schools right now has 150 administrators and teachers and almost 1,000 students. Everyone benefits by bringing it together. So your vote of approval for this, and thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you for coming. We can have a motion.
Second.
Roll call.
Any questions? I just had a question. $902,000 more since April. How do we account for that?
A change in the bidding climate, uncertainty. There is a lot more construction interest going on right now. Other projects have also seen, we've talked with other agencies, estimates coming in higher than, bids coming in higher than the estimate. I think during the PS&E process, there was also some adjustment in the expected cost on the bridge itself. The estimate that was given in April that we presented in May had been based on the engineer for the project. There's a subcontract engineer for the bridge specifically who had talked with Contech. Contech does prefabricated span bridges like this. That's where most of the bridges in the Papio Trail system have come from. And the engineer worked directly with Contech on estimating the cost of this bridge. It comes in two segments, a 180-foot piece and a 250-foot piece with a pier in the middle. The 250-foot piece is a very long span for a pedestrian bridge, and so it is a little bit more challenging. There's some more complicated design to avoid forces from wind and other types of things that that make a span that long challenging to accomplish. So the engineer had worked directly with Contech on estimating the cost of the bridge. When we got the final bid numbers back, there are line item breakouts of the different costs, and all of the bids were higher than the expected cost for the bridge itself, and so a majority of the overage is in the bridge itself. And EGA has talked to Contech and tried to figure out, you know, what happened here, and I think the conclusion is that there's a lot of work around, and so contractors were not as aggressive in the bidding as we would have hoped. So that's most of what we understand to be the increase in the price.
That's quite an increase, all right. Yep. I had one other question for any of you people back there. How many people do you estimate might use this trail or bridge across there?
It's hard to say. I mean, if you look at the geography and the demographics of that, Ted, if you just look from that bridge and go past 3M and you go through the school and by St. John's the church, and that goes all the way down to Mallard Landing, I believe. Is that right, Rich? That area is growing, and the roads are becoming improved. So all the community will naturally, I would think, use the trail for biking, for recreational, for just getting from north to south in that area. So the bridge is the one that brings us together to the Y, but the actual trail itself has tremendous use for Western Douglas County.
Might increase the usage of the trail?
I would think so. I would think so. And growth is that way. If you look at development and growth, is in along that corridor, along the surveyed area. I understand.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Director Jeff, we have installed pedestrian counters in other places in the Papio Trail system. While that's not specifically a line item in this project, it's certainly something we could talk with the community about installing later somewhere on the project to document the number of users. That's a relatively inexpensive addition.
That would be after the project's done, though, right?
Nothing will change the bid here from any portion of what's already been accomplished.
Anyone has no.
Well, this is one of the flattest areas in the county, one of the best biking areas, I can tell you. 270th Street, many years ago, when we started this thing up, a bicycle was ahead of me, and a gravel truck was passing that bicycle, and the bicyclist lost control and went down, and I almost hit the end of it, the young child. And that was kind of the start of this thing. Obviously, I'm very disappointed. Originally, we were going to go from Waterloo to Valley and then beyond, but a lot of roadblocks with water and, filling wetlands and whatnot, and time kept going. And the cost kept going up, so.
I know this has been a project near and dear to your heart for a long time.
It has indeed. Appreciate staff and staff's work on it, and I appreciate the response and support we're getting from the City of Valley. Thank you very much.
Roll call.
Yes.
Caesar?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Anderson.
Hi. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Item number 11, review and recommendation of FY 2021 long-range implementation plan.
Yep. This is an annual update to the planning document that we use for the next 5 years. So there have been some text changes to the descriptions of some of the programs. The staff breakdown, there's both a list and an org chart that's in there. Those have been updated. A majority of the substance of the document falls at the end in the tables 1 through 5. So I'm going to focus on just highlighting some of the changes that occurred in the end of the document itself. So if we start, table one highlights the land rights needs. Since we are working on the expected future construction of a couple different sites, that's probably page 40, I think. Maybe go back a couple of pages, maybe 30. There you go. Land rights. And so you can see that we have now added new lines for the additional priority dam sites that have land rights costs that are in the current budget. So this is for only FY 2021. Each of the tables leads forward to the next tables, and so it moves kind of chronologically forward. Table 1 is only the current year. Table 2 is a breakdown of the expected hours, and we don't see a significant change in the expected hours for any of the tasks, and so Table 2 is the same. Essentially, we've updated it slightly for some of the breakdown of the hours. Table 3 is a breakdown of the specific projects and programs. Here I'd like to highlight that three different items have been removed from the previous program and project list because they have been completed. What was previously number 3, the Thompson Creek Levee Rehab, what was previously number 5, Prairie Queen, and what was previously number 15, the Western Sarpy Clear Creek projects have all been removed, and so all of the numbers have been updated accordingly and slid forward. This shows a breakdown by different types of activities, and then the total on the right side matches all the way down at the bottom, matches to the current year budget, and then the sum of all of these different projects. There's one item I'd like to highlight here, the general admin number at the bottom there on line 54 under the operating costs is $35 million. That's because that line does also include some bond refinancing. So that's why that number is so large. It's the second year in a row that that number has been quite large because of that specific financial and accounting entry. Table 4 is a breakdown of the expected costs over the next 5 years. And in this table, we have more kind of projected information provided by Amanda about the priority watershed projects. So you can see item number 3, the Papio Creek and Tribbs project, now has a breakdown of the expected potential future costs for the priority projects that are not independently numbered. So these are projects that some preliminary work is going on now, but they have not been given their own description yet. They could be moved down to their own project program number, and they probably will be by next year, depending on how those move forward. But that new breakout under the Papio Creek Tribbs project line is new, and it gives a more detailed description of future costs in the next 5 years for each of those projects. As we continue forward, all of the program and project numbers match here to the same numbers in the previous table. If we go to table 5, there's really only one other major item I wanted to highlight as a difference from the previous document. At the very bottom of 2021, on the last page, as I mentioned, there is a large amount of keep going, one more page, I think, Bill. Keep going. Whatever's the last page. The very bottom, we've added a new line here to break out the cost of the bond refinancing, which is a specific line item in the current budget. And so there is a revenue associated with that. So that revenue appears in the current year budget, and there's a specific detailed breakdown of that here. That's something that we hadn't done the last time we did bond refinancing. But that is a new item to help highlight that the district projects line, which had been very large last year because it was holding that entry, now has a separate specific entry for bond refinancing. If there are any questions about the changes to the documents, I'd be glad to answer those. And this includes updates from all the other project managers. So if we need, I'd be glad to talk to any of them if they can provide answers to their sections as well.
Thank you very much. We can have a motion on this item. One from the public. Do we get a second?
I'll second it.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
One just really odd little question. Who does the chemigation certification program for the NRD? Who's in charge of that? Okay, I assumed it was. All right, thank you.
Thompson?
We've changed WP7 to Big Elk Lake.
Would you like to see that reflected in the document?
Yeah, minor editorial.
Sounds good.
We put them both, but I put them in for
So WP7, Big Elk Lake. Can do.
No, next year we may name all the WPs.
Any questions? Roll call.
Teaser?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Aye. Thank you, Eric. Item number 12, review and recommendation of request to remove policy 2.7, directors, term of directors from board policy. Do you want legal to speak to this item?
Good afternoon, directors. My understanding is that Director Grenwald had requested that 2.7 of the director policy be removed. Based on his interpretation, it was inconsistent with the implied framework of the statutes. The policy 2.7 was put in place, I believe, January of 2019 to kind of address some administrative issues with respect to directors who are no longer or expiring on their term, so that they wouldn't have to attend the first meeting when new directors were getting sworn in. So that was the intent of the policy. There's not a staff recommendation for Director Gwynrald's request. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
I just had a question. Do you think the he's not here to ask him, so was his intent just to make sure there's representation for a sub-district for that 1 week or so time frame between December 31st and the 1st?
I would assume so. I mean, practically speaking,
I was planning on asking him that.
Yeah, it's hard to speak on his behalf. I'll put it that way.
Right, but I'm assuming that was the reason for it.
I would assume so, too, yeah.
I have no idea what his intent was on that either, but unless he thought, you know, a presidential situation, who's going to represent us?
Yeah.
Just FYI, we can swear new directors in at any time. They take the office. Once a certified official. This, you know, he never talked to me. Just actually, he wanted this on the full board agenda, but properly goes through committee.
I guess taken to the extreme example, if you had an election where six new directors were elected.
Practically speaking, I don't think that's possible the way it's staggered.
We staggered the election, so that's not possible.
We would always have a quorum. Unless we had somebody resign. Because the
5 or 6. So.
That are up for election?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was I heard part of that. Yeah, well, 6 new directors came in. That's the first thing you do for January's board meeting. I swear, man. Subcommittee meetings don't need. You know. If that's essential for them.
Anybody else have other questions of Brett?
I was going to comment back in the late 80s or early 90s, I do know that there was a situation where we had some, I was reelected, but in early January before we met, we had some activity on the river, and I still acted as the acting director, and I, you know, nobody bitched them, and I'm assuming nobody would complain now. So it's not big of an issue.
I don't know either, because, you know, technically, 1st, but I'm not sworn in again until the first meeting in January. So I'm not a director for, you know.
That's a good question. I mean, I guess the policy should be refined to be expiring directors' terms. Right, right. No, you raise a good point.
That was my question, I guess, when the whole thing brought up, is that I'm technically not a director then until I'm sworn in again. So from January meeting, then I'm not a director.
Right. That
we're not a director.
Director left, right?
All this just and let's see. You're not a director. No, yeah. You're not a director.
No, you raise a good point. The intent of the policy was for expiring directors, not reelected ones. Yep.
Moving on, the time is 4:46. We'll call the FEL subcommittee to order. We have two absences, John Reese and Larry Bradley. So, Fred, would you fill in, please?
Sure.
With that, roll call, please.
Here.
I missed the Open Meeting Act. It is posted in the back. In the back. Moving on then to adoption agenda.
Mr. Chairman, we have item 8 to the top of the agenda, so Zach.
We have a motion or a request to move item 8 up to six. Item 6.
So moved.
So moved. And a second.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
Hi.
Yes. Come on up.
They have to approve the agenda. Yeah, motion to approve the agendas.
Oh, I'm sorry. Motion to approve the agenda. I apologize.
I'll second.
As amended.
Yes.
Aye.
Aye.
Yeah. I have proof of publication here before me. And the new item 6 was formerly the item 8. Go ahead.
Appreciate this group moving that around for me. That saves me a little bit of trouble with the wife at home. So, as you're aware, Olson has completed the design of the Cramper Lake Water Main Extension Project. So we're in the process of submitting everything to the state for review, as well as working with landowners for easements and land acquisition. The current design calls for construction of a new above-ground pump station. We're going to need to purchase roughly an area 100 feet by 100 feet, so pretty small parcel. We've been speaking with Anderson Farms. The gentleman who owns the company is on our Rural Water Advisory Board and has been a good steward of the district and worked with us on a number of projects. So in exchange for that 100 by 100 piece of property, he has another property that he's requested a meter pit installation on it. So the approximate value of that's $3,100. That's what we charge for new hookups. We actually, if we install it ourselves, can do it a little bit cheaper than that. So it's my recommendation that the subcommittee recommends to the board to authorize the general manager to move forward with the purchase agreement for the parcel for the new pump station.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Oh.
McCormick?
Yes.
Begley?
Aye.
Yes. Thank you. Moving on to agenda item 6, review and recommendation of accounting software, Carrie Fry. Hello, Carrie.
So the district has been using Blackbaud Financial Edge Fund accounting software for approximately 10 years, and it's nearing the end of its life cycle. We anticipated transitioning to a different system in the next couple of years. Unfortunately, we were recently notified that Blackbaud is discontinuing payroll support for all versions of Financial Edge at the end of this fiscal year, which obviously made upgrading priority. After reviewing multiple fund accounting systems with various levels of support and functionality and a wide range of prices from about $60,000 to a few hundred thousand, we determined that BSNA financial management software would be the best fit for the district. It is specifically designed for local governments, has provided solutions to over 2,000 municipalities and special districts, including the cities of Gretna and La Vista. Their proposal of $60,080 includes permanent licenses for the required modules, conversion for 10 years of our historical data, implementation support, and training. They're currently providing remote-only support and training due to COVID, but if conditions improved enough to allow them to do on-site training, there could be travel expenses of about $97.45. Annual maintenance and support would be $4,990 for the first 2 years and could be adjusted by the increase to CPI annually after that. Currently, our maintenance cost for Financial Edge is $12,283 with an average increase of 6.6% over the last 10 years, so this will basically pay for itself over 10 years, and I'm hopeful that it will work for us longer than that. So our recommendation would be for the subcommittee to recommend to the board that the general manager be authorized to execute a contract with BSNA Software not to exceed $69,825, subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager and approved as to form by district legal counsel.
Is there a motion? Questions that carry from the board?
Quick question, just curious on that CPI adjustment. Is that common, John or Carrie? Is that
for a lot of different services tied to a certain escalator, or it's a certain percentage of? Especially on maintenance type of. Obviously,
I think
the new software
will
carry.
Questions?
Have the ability to take a certain project, whether it's WP 1 or 2 or 4, certain areas of that project to get the expenses for that. Break out land costs. It'd be easy to break out. Software system?
Well, it should be. Currently, our chart of accounts kind of handles that, but this does have a more robust fixed assets module that will help us track construction and progress a lot easier. Short answer, probably yes.
Yes, okay. Thank you. That's all I needed.
Further questions? Roll call.
Aye.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Carrie. Item 7, Eric, West Papier Drainage Improvements, Land Rights, the City of Omaha.
Hello again. Bill, if you can pull up the map, I think that'll be the best place to start. We've talked about some drainage improvements along the West Papio Trail and the West Papio Creek a couple times in the past, including in July of 2020 when we talked about a contribution to a drainage structure improvement along the West Papio Creek near 132nd Street. This project is has been designed and will be bid along with that project, but the two are not physically connected. That project is entirely in city right-of-way, it will potentially work with the future trail. This project, a portion of the land rights necessary to construct the project are on top of the former railroad corridor that the NRD purchased from Union Pacific Railroad under the Rails to Trails protection from the Surface Transportation Board. So on the map, you can see two kind of red-orange lines from the upper left to the lower right. That represents the 100-foot wide rail corridor that we used to construct the trail. The aerial shown here actually shows the silt fence along the edge of the construction of the trail, so it gives you a pretty good idea of where the trail is now located. There's a ditch that runs between the trail and the parking lot, the triangular-shaped parking lot that comes from the northwest to the southeast. There's a ditch that flows under that drive into Tyson and flows down and then connects into the West Papio Creek. The City of Omaha would like to do some reconstruction in that ditch to help protect the sanitary sewer, which is running again from the left edge of the map along the north or left bank of the creek all the way down and then turns and follows the creek as it runs parallel with Harry Anderson Ave. So the city would like to install an inlet and a drop structure to help the water get over the sanitary line and down into the West Papio. And they need land rights from the district in order to construct that project, both temporary for construction and permanent for ongoing maintenance and access to the project. Because this location is the property rights that we have in this location are protected by the Surface Transportation Board, we cannot sell the land and we cannot give a permanent easement to the land. So working with legal counsel, we created a license agreement similar to the license agreement we used at the very end of this corridor at 132nd and Q when we discussed a potential development project in that location. So we are going to, the City of Omaha has reviewed and approved the license agreement, which grants them access for both construction and maintenance at this location. There's not any financial transaction here. It's a license agreement for 99 years. We expect to be doing trail construction here over the next couple of years. The city has supported that. Their project is designed to incorporate the potential future trail construction in this location. And so this license agreement will give them the land rights they need to construct this project. And again, we will continue to partner with them on the stormwater aspects as well as the trail in this location.
Any discussion from the directors? Not seeing none, roll call.
I had a question. Ask it post. Yeah. The only question I had was the land must be maintained and made available for rail transport. If the railroad wants it back, they can just grab it back?
In theory, they could. That is part of the Rails to Trails corridor protection. If you look up and down this former rail corridor, again, this is the original transcontinental line location. So as you look northwest, this runs into right in the center of the Lumberyard District. You can't see it on this map. It's across Q Street. And as you look to the southeast, Lux 96, the apartment building, is built directly on top of this same rail corridor. They are at significantly more risk of the financial consequences of a reactivation of the rail line. And the property rights have been divided in lots of other places. So UP could outright sell that portion of the land to any different owner they wanted. This portion, in order to protect it under that Rails to Trails corridor, does have that protection. So in theory, the railroad could try that. But other sections on both ends have already been abandoned in ways that cannot be reactivated very easily or, I think, at all. So I think we are at very, very limited risk of that happening.
Any recommendation of Granite Falls North Sanitary Sewer and Storm Sewer easements at Big Elk Lake, Marlin?
Could you put the that map up, please? There we go.
They give you a 4-minute limit, Marlin.
4-minute limit. All right. Well, if you take a look at the map that's up on the screen, it'll kind of describe some easements that need to be granted to development next to our Big Elk Lake, parenthesis WP7. This big Granite Falls North is the subdivision that's shown here on the left side or the west side of Big Elk Lake that's currently, of course, under construction. When this construction began on this project and prior to that, actually, we worked with the community here, Papillion and others in Sarpy County to construct a sewer line along and on the property. And so the adjacent developments need to connect into that interceptor sewer that runs to the Omaha Wastewater Treatment Plant. On this map, then, there are three locations, one up here, one here, a dark red, and one here, that show where the sanitary sewer would be connected to the main interceptor. Also, and so they need an easement on the district's property for that, and we've always anticipated that. We've also
have a blue area here, which would be for storm sewer construction and an outlet and some riprap and a waterway to the lake. And then the shaded areas are areas where there'd be temporary construction easement. So the item before you, and we'd recommend, is that you grant this sanitary improvement district number 312 here, Granite Falls North, these easements for construction of their facilities.
Second. Any further discussion?
Yes. Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Item 10, review and recommendation of sale of Prairie Clean Surplus Land. Morning.
This is an item, I don't know, are we going into the executive session? Nope, not at this time. This this item is related to Prairie Queen Reservoir that currently is operated by the City of Papillion. Back in 2014, we purchased some property for this reservoir, and there were some excess lands along with that purchase from a landowner who wanted to sell his whole 80 acres rather than leave some remnant parcels. And there's 27 acres, and maybe if you could show the map that comes up here, and this shows, yeah, the 80 acres is this 80 acres that lies west of 132nd here, and this is Highway 370. And so this was the entire farm, and the district retained this portion in red and blue here that we did not, is not needed for the project as potential surplus land. And the district declared that 27 plus acres of surplus land and actually put it up for auction in 2015. We did not get any bids that were greater than the reserve. The reserve was $29,000. We purchased it at $28,000 an acre. Well, in recent months, we've been approached by a developer that is interested in acquiring this 27 acres, and so that we had an appraisal done for this property at $2 million, and came back at $2,010,000. The development company Invest CRE LLC has made an offer and a purchase agreement for that amount, and the district and we are recommending that you accept that purchase agreement. We do have Brian Hartman here with the development company, and he'd like to say a couple words.
You bet. Brian Hartman. I'm with NAIMP Dodge Commercial Real Estate, and address is 12915 West Dodge Road. And I'm representing the ownership group that has submitted a purchase agreement and available for questions with regard to this project.
Is it public knowledge that it proposes a residential, commercial, mixed use, or?
Yeah, it's not public knowledge, but I don't mind sharing it. It's going to be a mixed use development on the. Go ahead.
Staff is happy with all the easements that they have to for access for anything in the future.
In fact, I might just mention that. Go back to that map if you would. Okay. Looking at this map, actually, you granted an easement for a road access off of Highway 370 here for a development that is now named as Amazon that is developing this property that we didn't know at the time. So that access provided a road here into their property and also ours. It's half on theirs and ours, and I think that certainly helped with the improvement of access and desirability of this parcel. We of course, if as far as easements for the reservoir over here and our water quality basin, those do not cross over into this property, except there is in this purple area a floodway easement that would need to be observed, and we would retain that easement for our purposes.
Eric, kind of in back.
Eric, if you could.
Back on.
When we talk about our trail connectivity plan and going under 370, is this where it goes?
This is one potential location. It's not currently in any of the conceptual plans. We have talked with Sarpy County and the City of Papillion about this. The flood pool easement along the south side of the sediment basin, we believe, would allow for the construction of a trail. So the water flows to the east under 132nd. So the concept that we've been investigating is connection along the south side of the sediment basin, around the edge of the structure, under the road at 132nd Street, which we think is possible, in connection into the existing trail in the lake. Your question was about 370. The water does flow from the south along, which is generally called Westmont Creek. We did talk about this a little bit in the connectivity plan discussion. We haven't done any engineering investigation, but under Highway 370 and into the basin here, yes, that would be the location. So we talked with...
We're okay if this, the rust color gets sold. We've still got, as Martin said, that easement. The one main easement on the left, that's probably... We won't have to buy it back in the future.
This is something we would need to discuss with the property developer, with the City of Papillion, and with Sarpy County. It's very preliminary, but we would like to work with all three, and based on the information that they've provided about their potential use type, sounds like they might be interested, so we'll follow up with that discussion.
I see Sarpy nodding his head like he's going to plan to have a trail there to serve the customer south of 370.
Yes, yeah, and we talked to Amanda about that, and as far as that, we're aware of the desire, and actually that we're in support of that. And we just, and it's going to generally go in that purple area is where the trail connection is going to go, and we're okay with that. And we just said, hey, yeah, because we're going to be designing the whole site, and we'll put it in there that makes the most sense for the NRD's purposes and the community's purposes, and we'd like to have it. So,
we'll call it the Hartman Trail.
I'm more of a background guy when it comes to that. So we'll name it after one of the partners, maybe. Thank you, though, sir.
No floating bridges.
No, thank you.
Any further questions?
Move staff recommendation.
I'll make a motion that we accept staff recommendation.
I'm sorry, I apologize. Thank you. Further discussion? No call.
Aye.
Conley? Yes.
Shepherdson?
Thanks a lot.
Item number 11, review recommendation of WP6, WP7 professional services accounts over 110%. Martin?
Yes, this involves this reservoir Big Elk Lake and also WP6 that are jointly under construction right now and will be completed later this year, hopefully with some minor cleanups next year. But you approved an increase in the professional services contract with Fire Engineering back in August, and we failed to at the time when you approved that an amendment and an increase in costs under that contract to look at the budget and realize that that then exceeded the 110% of budget limit. And so we're here to basically just clean up that issue to provide for that those budget line items for WP6 and 7 to increase from their professional services portion to increase from $100,000 to $186,000 in both projects. So that'd be a total of about 72,000 increase, 86 in each one. So our recommendation is that you you allow those accounts to budget accounts to increase up to 186,000 each.
Second. Discussion? Roll call.
Conway?
Aye. Yes.
Edwards?
Aye.
Chairperson?
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our agenda.